you're working from home. You settle in with a cup of coffee, ready to get the day started. Before you look at that to-do list, turn on your favorite Odyssey sports station on your smart speaker. We'll keep you company and bring you the latest updates from your teams while you tackle your inbox or get ready for another meeting that probably could have been an email. Power through the workday with the entertaining sports coverage you love from the local voices you trust. Just ask your smart speaker to play your favorite station.
Wake up!
Wake up!
Mike Mulligan, David Haw.
How old is he?
Dalton?
137 years old!
He's 36. We talked about how long he had been in the league yesterday. Yeah. He has been better. He's been very good for the majority of that time.
Right now, it's my time.
Oh, boy. Poor Bryce.
A lot of people down were worried about that during the combine. Remember that?
Yeah, I thought, didn't Mark Rohde told us that he was, at one point, it went through his head that he might try to steal him.
Bears.
Is Mark Rohde taller than Bryce Young? Poor Bryce Young. I know.
He showed up at camp.
Yeah.
He looked like he was going to, like, day school.
Back to school. To prove to Dad that I'm not a fool.
Start your mornings with Mully and Haw, 5:30 till 10 a.m. on 670 The Score.
Just want to give him a little hug.
The fruit cup.
It's going to be okay, little fella.
Yeah, come on.
You're okay.
Let's go.
Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score. Well, I'll tell you what, Mr. David, the weekend in sports has got a lot to live up to after last night.
Good morning, Mully. Yes, happy Friday. And if you went to bed early, boy, did you miss a lot. And
How could you go to bed?
You couldn't.
No.
Not with...
I was trapped.
The Mets and the Brewers holding your attention. Not with the Falcons and the Bucks playing quite a game for a Thursday night. I'm glad Al Michaels was pleased because he finally got a game worth announcing. And then there's more big baseball news we need to get to.
Oh, my God.
Terry Francona is back and not in Chicago.
It's ridiculous.
But if you went to bed early, you missed all those headlines. Let's start with the Mets, the dreaded Mets.
Your team. Oh, no, wait.
No.
Switch quickly at the end.
So I'm watching there, and they show Murph. And I have to say, back-to-back home runs by the Brewers.
Yeah, in the seventh inning.
2-0, you're thinking, whoa. Brats for everybody.
Go Brewers.
Go Brewers.
Brat for everybody.
Brats and beers for breakfast. And then I'm thinking, yes, this is playoff baseball. This is what it's all about. This is the home team. Oh, I like this format. And then Pete Alonso.
Let me just say this, and we'll get to that in a second. But when I thought of that game, before that game, as I watched that game, I thought I was getting this feeling. As you watched, I think at one point, like, 20 consecutive Mets went down with only Frankie Lindor getting a hit. And if you weren't named Frankie, there was no chance you were going to get a hit. And I'm watching this and I'm thinking to myself, like, first run wins. Because if somehow the Brewers go up.
It was that kind of night.
That game is over because their bullpen will shut you down.
Lockdown bullpen.
That's
especially
it.
When Murph went to Freddie Peralta. In the eighth, this is extreme measures, right? Desperate times. You go to your starters. You go to your best pitchers. Murph did what managers, good managers do, and it worked. Then the ninth, you have everything set up. Your all-star closer, he's back. He's been good.
Unbelievable.
He's been good the second half of the season since coming back from injury. You trust your closer. Everything is right. You're at home. And then walk in a hit. Two men on. Pete Alonso.
Future Cup.
Future Cup, Pete Alonso?
That's what I said.
Not anymore.
No.
Not anymore.
Now they won't let him go.
They can't let him go. That was the biggest home run of his career.
Oh, there's...
Defining moment.
Without a doubt.
You think he's going to walk now?
Well, I think...
With Steve Cohen?
I think the Cubs are going to take him.
No.
I thought he was the guy they were taking.
With a swing of the bat, he beat the Brewers and dashed the Cubs' hopes of ever getting him in Wrigley Field.
You had him coming in at the trade deadline.
I had him batting.
How could he possibly have hit a home run?
I had him batting fourth and hitting 45 homers at Wrigley. Now he's staying with the Mets.
I never thought Devin would. I honest to God, I thought Milwaukee had this advantage of when they went to the bullpen, the game was over. And then you get, Frankie Lindor fights for a walk, and you're like, oh, wow, but he's the only guy that can hit. And then they get a strikeout, and you're like, oh, this isn't this. You know, this is over. And I mean, my God. That home run was absolutely, that was the stuff of polar bear legend.
It really was polar bear legend. It was Mets legend. It was on brand for a team that really has had their version of what the Tigers went through in the American League. They have really been resurgent. They were left for dead, and then here they are playing the Phillies with a chance to go to the NLCS. Two outs away from elimination. Tobias Myers was better than I think anybody expected for the Brewers. Murph pushes the right buttons in the bullpen. It was playoff baseball. It was everything you had hoped in terms of drama.
Did you hear what he said afterward? He said it was a tragedy, that it felt tragic. I felt so bad. It was an articulate comment, but it was painful to hear him say that.
Well, more heartbreak for Brewers fans in October that have gotten used to their share because of the way that they have. Great regular season team. They do everything right in the regular season over the long haul. They play baseball the right way. They're a team that you can be envious of if you are on the outside looking in. They do everything right. Then they get to the postseason and things happen. Last night, something happened. Pete Alonso went to right field and homered for the first time since September 19th.
That's ridiculous.
Think about that.
Yeah.
You think you got him where you want him, and Pete Alonso's the guy that obviously has prodigious power but has not been using it lately. It's been how many days? I could do the math. 2 weeks since his last home run. And he goes to right field of all places.
And I would just wonder, did it go through your head as you watch that? The guy also gives up an insurance run before you can get him out. Did it go through your head that there's a little touch of magic to what the Mets are doing?
Yes, it did.
The way that they got in.
Yes, it did.
What they're, you know, winning the first game, pushing it to three, and then obviously that was all magic. There was a little miracle Mets thing going on in the back of my head.
Think about their week.
That's what I was thinking.
Think about their week.
More than anything else.
They were pushed to the final day, and then the season was extended to Monday. They have to win in the doubleheader against the Braves down in Atlanta. Right?
Yeah.
So they're on the road all week.
Yeah. And they had a rally to get Frankie Lindor to hit a late home run to win the first game of that.
Frankie Lindor's fantastic.
He's a great player.
So much fun to watch. Player. People talk about not having magnetic stars in baseball. They're not talking about him. He is electric. I love watching him. So they do what they do in Atlanta, and then they have to go to Milwaukee. They're on the road for three games in this weird kind of playoff format. They steal the first game.
Unbelievable.
Lose the second, and then they look like they're facing elimination, and then Pete Alonso goes to right field. I think that's what did it for me. It wasn't like Pete Alonso standing up there and making home run derby, and I'm going to hit this as far as I can, and he hits it to, you know, Kenosha.
Oh, you thought for a second it might be caught. There's more. Oh, my God.
It's like an excuse me home run. I'm going to make history here.
Oh, my God.
And then him running around the bases, the chef's kiss around first.
Oh, the chef's kiss.
Oh, my gosh.
Hilarious.
That's a moment.
That is a great moment.
I just loved it in terms of
can't wait for
from
that
a
next
fan
year
perspective. I hope you're right. But I know you're wrong. I know you're just teasing me and torturing me.
I'm having fun with it.
So that was.
It was really. It was just like a huge moment. And then I've got to make a complaint, and maybe someone can solve my problem life.
If it doesn't have to do with your TV service, I'm in.
Okay. It does have to do with my TV service. It's not what you think about my TV service.
Okay.
It's not about the channels I don't have. Here's my problem.
Mm-hmm.
My problem is whenever you go to a break, I got to figure out where I put the other remote, and I got to go back, and I got to turn on Prime, and then I got to watch. So I got the game on my phone. I'm not watching the football game live, but I'm monitoring it.
You're speaking for a lot of people here.
While I am watching the baseball.
You can't go back and forth easy.
And I can't just hit a button and watch the thing. And I got to tell you,
Come on, Roger Goodell.
Get that technology back, because it's blanking up my ability to watch sports in the way I like to.
Because last night, hey, that's a good rant. Last night, we were in the midst of all the playoff drama we just described with Mets Brewers and Kirk Cousins having himself a night.
There's a video game going on.
Yes.
That was unbelievable.
It was in Atlanta. That game goes to overtime. I missed the overtime. I fell asleep. But Kirk Cousins, over 500 yards. Darnell Mooney had himself a night. They went to overtime because he dropped a pass. And the Falcons pull it out against the Bucs in a game that was
incredible game.
Good enough. So Al Michaels was even pleased.
Oh, it was a really good football game. And I missed. I could have had glimpses of that all night long, and maybe I would. Maybe it helped me watch the baseball, but it's not enjoyable when you can't just click over. I hate and like. Do not tell me to buy another television. I'm not
going to sit with
two TVs. That's absurd.
They want to keep.
I'm not Elvis.
They want to keep you there. You know.
But I've been to Graceland.
You sound a little all shook up.
Yeah.
Right now.
I'm just saying,
you are all shook
the
up.
Way that if that game had been on the NFL Network, at least I could have watched it, right?
You need to flip.
Hit a button. Oh, I definitely have a minute and a half, two
so
minutes
during
here.
Commercial, you can see a couple plays. You
Perfect.
Can see Kirk Cousins
yes.
doing things. Wait until he gets healthy. And that team's different.
There must be a way around that. Is there a way around that? Have you figured out how?
No.
Okay.
I don't think there is a way around that.
Because I, honest to God, I'm such a, you know, broken down old sports viewer that I worry, Mulligan, you know, you've now reached a point where you're the guy that can't just click over.
I don't think there's a way. I'm sure our texters will let us know, but I don't think there's a way where if you go to the app or basically the Amazon app on your television, your smart TV, that you can go between both things without really waiting longer than necessary.
Yeah.
Enough to annoy you.
I'm
or anybody, not just you.
But it was like there was something really cool happening, but you can't stop watching what this is going on here. And then all of a sudden it's like Sophie's Choice. The boy, the girl, like what do I do
here? You go to the playoffs because it's elimination.
Exactly.
So let's go back to that for a second. Do you think that what happened with the Mets last night and this week, much like we discussed yesterday with the Tigers and the history they made.
Yes.
What is the role of momentum in these playoffs? Do the Mets have momentum going to Philadelphia, the best team in the National League?
The Dodgers might be the best team. But
record-wise.
And the Phillies have pitching.
Aren't they the number one seed?
Yeah. Here's the problem. And it is a problem. Which is, now you, like, if you're not wrecked from the week you just had, if you're not like the euphoria of getting into the playoffs on the last day of the season plus, right, where you had the rain out doubleheader, and then you go to Milwaukee and you're pushed to three,
but you don't look at it that way.
I'm just saying, does it ever hit a point when you get to, you finally like take a breather in Philadelphia and you're watching the start of the game where you're like,
nope.
Oh man, I'm trolling.
I think you're fueled by adrenaline all month long. And the Dodgers did win 98 games. The Phillies only won 95.
See?
Dodgers number one seed, but still you're going against a Phillies team that has every reason to believe that they are positioned to go back to the World Series and this time win it. I don't know if you're the Mets if you run out of gas. I don't know if you exhale. I doubt they do. They've got a lot of real exciting players that refuse to let that happen. Lindor, it begins with him. You look at Nimmo, came through in the clutch.
Yeah.
Edwin Diaz had a really – they went to him because they felt like maybe if they didn't get to him, they didn't want to have him idle. They were down 2-0. He held serve. He couldn't go in the ninth. And so – I think that you look at what they're able to do to get to this point. They're not going to. I don't know.
It'll
be a good series.
It feels like a huge advantage for the rested team, and maybe it isn't. Maybe you're right, but I just don't know. I mean, if ever a team needs an off day, it's the Mets.
Maybe they want to keep playing. I mean, remember we have seen examples where off days and lulls in schedules and breaks have worked to the team's detriment. Look as early and as recent as last year. The Diamondbacks came in hot And they took that and rode that all the way to the World Series.
See, I knew I should not have brought up my problem with watching the two different sporting events. Someone just texted in, does Mully have dial-up? You mean son of a dog.
How did he know?
What does my dial-up have to do with it? No, I have all the modern technology. It's just difficult for me that I can't just click over, okay? So let's let it end at that.
All right. So we got Phillies, Mets, and then we got Dodgers, Padres. That is going to be good in the National League. Great series, both of them. American League, you've got the two teams in the AL Central you just didn't expect to still be playing. I just didn't expect the Royals and the Tigers to still be alive among the final four. I did not think that was going to be possible. Obviously, the Yankees, you think is they're going to be in the, I think, World Series. They're going to win the pennant. But after this week, maybe I shouldn't be so sure.
All right. Meanwhile, right, as if that isn't enough to talk about, Terry Francona is named the manager of the Reds. The Reds had a terrible year. They had a ton of injuries. That is a good young team, and they just hired a manager that will make hay for them, right? That will make hay in the sunshine.
Well, I think when you look at Terry Francona, number one, once you get past the surprise, maybe even shock that he's going to come back to manage the Reds at 65 years old.
Right.
Because of his health issues in the past, which took him away from the Guardians, which because of the fact that you just thought they were going in a different direction, they've got a young team on the rise. This is a great move for baseball because the game is better with Terry Francona in it. It's a tough move, tough night for the Cubs because Terry Francona with that team, he's not going to screw it up.
Yeah.
He's not going to get
– exactly.
He's not going to be one of those managers that makes mistakes that squanders talent. He's going to maximize that potential, which is a scary proposition in a division that you look at, and it does feel like a lot of teams can say it's winnable to them. The Reds are one of those teams now because of their manager. Much the way the Cubs felt when they hired Craig Counsell a year ago, I think the Reds feel that way today. They have to feel like they got a manager that's going to make a difference.
Yeah, I think they do have a manager that's going to make a difference. I think it's a good move. I'm surprised that David Ross's name didn't come up and there wasn't more conversation there. I thought when I heard Terry Francona speak last week and talk about the loyalty that Jerry Reinsdorf had shown people, I wondered, oh, wow, is that a possibility here in Chicago? And I kind of dismissed it at the time because I thought, well, what would be in it for Tito? Why would you put yourself through that sort of a rebuild? And, you know, how much time are we talking about? Will it take before the Sox are willing to or able to make any kind? You know, it's going to be a few years minimum. And that's if they do the right things and spend well. And please don't tell me about prospects. But it is going to be a few years. So it didn't make sense from a timeline, but it made sense from, you know, Jerry jumping in when they're about to interview people and hiring a guy.
We played that audio from Terry Francona on the Baseball Isn't Boring podcast, largely because of the implication that he had respect for Jerry Reinsdorf and he was available as a manager.
Yes.
And you put two and two yes. together and you wonder why it doesn't equal four. And you wonder if the Sox even made an overture.
Yeah, and I would guess not because...
Why?
Well, I think because, as I said, you're talking about a guy who is too good for this job. He just is. He might be able to work some magic with young players that are coming back from injury. I don't think he's going
to create players. I want him to tell me that, though.
Well, okay,
I want him to be the one that takes himself out of the running or politely tells you this isn't a good fit.
Okay, and then I will tell you the real reason I thought he was a bad fit, which is that you would have to pay Terry Francona like a proper manager, and I think part of what the White Sox did is they went on the cheap with Pedro, and they went on the cheap with Grady Sizemore, and they're going to go on the cheap with their next hire, and that's why they're talking about the dude from the Dodgers first base line.
I think that you are on it there. Clayton McCullough is the first base coach. He would come cheaper.
That's the dude from the first base line.
The dude from the first base line. We're going to refer to him that way moving forward. Who'd the White Sox hire? Oh, that dude from the first base line. Clayton something or another. So, but that speaks to what we're talking about here. If I were the White Sox and they did reach out to Terry Francona or they did have a conversation, I would make sure that that got leaked. Because right now you're being questioned about a guy that invoked the respect he has or invoked the loyalty that Jerry Reinsdorf shows employees this week publicly.
Yes.
One of the most respected managers in baseball, a championship manager. Now he's managing somewhere else. And you have a vacancy and a rebuild that is, we have referred to it more, not a rebuild, it's a bulldoze. Then you have to let me know why you didn't call, why you didn't ask. If he was there for the taking, why is he going somewhere else? So I think if they talk to him, let people know that in the way that these things are made known. The Reds are going to be a team that I think now is aggressive in the offseason, now to try to fill in the holes. They have to try to win with a sense of urgency because Terry Francona is 65 years old.
Right. Right. It changes the timeline for what they're going to be able to do.
How does it change the division?
You know, Tony La Russa got a job when he was 76. So we shouldn't talk about age as a deterrent or some reason not to hire someone.
It shouldn't have been.
It shouldn't be.
Not, even though we endured the La Russa experience.
He has some issues, some health issues that are also of concern. 65 is the new 40, so it's not like it. But are the White Sox now just going to turn around and hire Clayton Moore and let him?
Clayton McCullough, the guy in the first baseline. Clayton McCullough. No. And I had no relation to Kershaw. That's a different Clayton. Okay. I don't want you to make that mistake. But all those things are valid, Molly, but I think that the White Sox could have talked themselves out of talking to Terry Francona for reasons we're articulating here. But I want to know, and it should be the case, Terry Francona should be the one who would have disqualified him from the process.
Yes, but
I want the White Sox to be that ambitious.
But didn't Dustin teach us that paying a guy $8 million a year doesn't make him a good manager?
No. I'm rejecting that lesson.
That's the lesson he attempts to teach us.
I am not paying attention to that classroom session. Yeah. I still don't believe that.
Spend the money on players?
I think the Cubs spent the money on the manager who's the right manager for this team still. I am not bailing on Craig Counsell.
What if they had fired Craig Counsell and hired Terry Franco?
I think they would have been a mistake.
I know. I'm totally just goofing.
But I did wonder if we were going to come in here this morning and be talking about, and I spent last night thinking about what we were going to say as the Brewers advanced almost a year after losing their manager to the Cubs. But now it's a moot point because as we saw people reacting to, the Brewers got to the playoffs, but they did what they typically do in the postseason, and that is make an early exit. Mm-hmm. And they have done that. I feel for Pat Murphy, but the Mets really made it happen. Big night. Last night was a lot of fun, and it helped us distract from the Bears' offensive issues, which we'll get into.
Yeah, we got to get into it because there's a lot of meat on that bone, and we will do that, and we'll do it next. We've got the pick six. We're going to pick apart all the stories of the day. It's Mully and Haw on the Score.
You're working from home. You settle in with a cup of coffee, ready to get the day started. Before you look at that to-do list, turn on your favorite Odyssey sports station on your smart speaker. We'll keep you company and bring you the latest updates from your teams while you tackle your inbox or get ready for another meeting that probably could have been an email. Power through the workday with the entertaining sports coverage you love from the local voices you trust. Just ask your smart speaker to play your favorite station.
It's Pick Six with Mully and Haw, where we debate the top six sports stories of the day and then open it up to you, the Chicago sports fan. Call us at 312-644-6767, or you can tweet your thoughts at Mully Haw. Pick Six with Mully and Haw starts now.
Does the fact that our guy Brad Biggs mentioned yesterday that the Bears play five of the six worst passing defense in the NFL consecutively mean it's time for Caleb Williams and the offense to cash in on a favorable condition? Well, the Bears open things up starting Sunday against Carolina. Do you expect Williams to begin putting up bigger passer ratings against opponents who have averaged from 100.8 to 123.3 passer ratings against?
It's pretty extraordinary. Their next five opponents have allowed opposing passers to be over 100 in their passer rating in every game, and these are really, there's some really high numbers. I think, again, if you're allowing somebody to throw for 123.3, you're not playing much defense. Now, that's Washington, and they're playing some pretty good offense. So that'll be a fascinating game after they get through the bye week following the London trip next week. So there's a lot to look at. I keep wondering why the offense isn't able to connect downfield, why the Bears are not able to put points up on the board in the early parts of games. And I keep going back to this idea, and I don't want to dismiss it altogether. This idea that their offensive line is not giving them enough time to get that done. And I you know, whenever you're patchworking an offensive line, and whether that's because you have a player that you overpaid that doesn't belong in the starting five, or you've got injuries, or you've got a guy that's out that hasn't come back, whatever the case may be, they got to figure out a way to get more time for the quarterback, and that will resolve some of these issues. But, you know, the game plan last week was just get rid of the ball, get rid of the ball, get rid of the ball. I think the game plan should shift a little this week. I think this is an opportunity to add in some elements to what they were doing a week ago to get the ball downfield more and to maybe incorporate the use of wide receivers in their attack this week.
Well, if not now, when, right? If you're not going to put the ball up in the air now, when in the world would you do it? This is not a great pass rush. It's not a great defense. Offensive line should look better pass protecting. And the good news is that Tevin Jenkins was limited in practice, and I think they could use him on Sunday.
Protect the quarterback, trust the quarterback, and allow him to use his arm talent to push the ball down the field. You've got to stress the fact that he needs to push the ball down the field. It's an opportunity, really, for Caleb Williams and the Bears on a broader scope to establish a passing game that has been disappointing through four games. Let's be honest here. We spent the offseason and largely much of the preseason talking about the obviously Caleb Williams dominated conversations, and the second, I think, most talked about thing was the receiving trio that they had. They have Keenan Allen, who's been, you know, kind of injured, DJ Moore, who's been underutilized, Decoy Moore, and Roma Dunze, who has been okay, but I don't think that all three of them together have been what we expected. This is an opportunity Sunday to see what you've got in terms of weaponry. So show it off. Protect the quarterback. Build a clean pocket. Let him sit there and throw down the field, not horizontal, vertical. And I think this is a chance against a defense that will make it a little bit more easy to move the chains than some of the defenses you have faced. If Caleb Williams finishes Sunday with a passer rating lower than 100, I think you'll be mildly disappointed because of what is possible against his defense and the kind of growth that we have seen from him the last couple weeks.
Oh, boy, that's a tough question.
That's the voice of Brad Biggs. Biggs time, 7 a.m. What's the key position matchup in Sunday's game between the Bears and the Panthers? Do the Panthers have an advantage in any area?
Well, I think that, to me, the only way the Panthers can feel like they're going to threaten the Bears and upset the Bears is that they have an offensive line against the Bears' defensive line, and they use the running game like other teams have against the Bears. They use the running game to set up play action passing, and Andy Dalton is efficient. That's got to be their game plan. The key positional matchup in that context is the offensive line for the Panthers against the defensive front of the Bears. And the offensive line for the Panthers is not bad. Is not as bad as the rest of their team. Certainly not as putrid as their defense. And you get what you pay for. And I was stunned to learn when I saw this last night. Patrick Finley from the Sun-Times pointed this out. There are only two other teams in the NFL that have invested more in their offensive line than the Carolina Panthers. That is a commitment. And so if those guys up front for the Panthers can figure out a way with Chuba Hubbard, who's got maybe one of the best names for a running back in the NFL, Chuba Hubbard. This is a guy who could find some space, perhaps. If not, he's going to make some room himself. Chuba Hubbard, look out. He's coming down that hole, and he's going to hit you. I think you've got to stop the run. This offensive line will be committed to establishing the run. To me, that is the positional matchup, because from that, all things will come. If you can do that, then you can come after Andy Dalton. You can harass him. He's not immobile at this stage of his career. He's 36, for goodness sakes. Make him rattled. He will throw you the football. Make him fumble and capitalize. Get a lead, and then offensively things will fall into place. But it all starts with how well the Bears' defensive front handles the Panthers' offensive line.
Well, Thursday's coordinator day up at Halas Hall, and the D.C., Eric Washington, said the stars of the Panthers are the O-line and, as David just mentioned his name, and it's a fun one, Chuba Hubbard. And last week, something that even though the Bears won the game last week, they were kind of getting gashed in the second half against the run. I'm sure the Panthers noticed that. Okay, they get paid too. You know how you stop a passing game? You know how you stop a bad defense that can't defend the pass? You run the ball, you control the line of scrimmage, you maintain time of possession. So the Bears need to stop the run, or we're not going to be able to see Caleb Williams put the ball down the field because he's not going to be out on the field long enough.
Yeah, I think most of the matchups are good for the Bears in this game. I mean, I'm just being honest. I think that Chuba Hubbard, as a Canadian, the guy was did he play 3 years at Oklahoma State? I think he was an early entry guy, came out as a junior. He's still only 25 years old.
Wow.
Still a young guy. He's been in the league for 4 years. So it's interesting that they got a line and they got a running back, and the Bears have been allowing teams to run the football against them. The Bears are also, did I see this correctly, they have the second highest pressure rate from their defensive line on quarterbacks. That's pretty outstanding. Mm-hmm. So I'm not overly concerned about if they obviously get the running game going and they can play action, and then there's no doubt the Red Rifle can hurt you. But he's not as mobile as he once was, and I think they can keep him in the pocket, and he's a kind of a stationary target at this point in his career. So I think that you can kind of tee off on him. The key here is the Bears need to get up early in the game, and this is a team that allows that will allow you points early in the game. What do they allow in the first quarter? 13 points, something like that. So that is a team you need to get a couple touchdowns and then situationally put them in a position where they can't run the football as much as anything else. The Bears, because they don't score early, they have failed to really play good situational football. They've been unable to get ahead in these games, and they've trailed I think the third most of any team in the league. That's pretty ugly. I mean, they need to get ahead and play from ahead and then tee off on the quarterback.
Did you know that Chuba Hubbard had 2,000 yards his junior year?
Oh, yeah. I mean, he was like one of those, you know, Barry Sanders kind of Oklahoma State
unbelievable
guy.
Unbelievable numbers.
Like a real, yeah, no, he had.
Don't underestimate Chuba Hubbard.
No one is.
Yeah, the Bears have been playing from behind way too much. The only team worse than the Bears, as far as that goes, if I understood the stat correct, the Dolphins have not led for 1 minute so far this year.
Hey, well, here's another question.
Okay.
We got the next question. Third question.
The Bears, they've managed just 3 total points in the first quarter thus far. Will Sunday mark the breakthrough? Did Shane Waldron sufficiently answer why the starts have been slow?
I'm sorry. I just giggle when you lose your track there. It's understandable. We're all talking at once. I'm the one who screwed it up. I'm sorry. I injected the Chuba Hubbard stat. Good question.
And that led to Dustin thinking he should then go.
How many first quarter points will they score on Sunday?
All right. We're back on track now. So I think that, although I'm going jumping in, I'm sorry.
I'm out of order. You go.
The Bears have not scored enough in the first quarter. That goes without saying. I didn't realize until doing a little bit more looking at the numbers, only the Eagles are behind the Bears in terms of first quarter futility. They haven't scored, and the Bears are second to the last. The Bears are the last in the league in yards per play in the first quarter, 2.67 yards per play. Mm. The one number that I can't get past, they have snapped the ball 46 times in the first quarter this season, and 16 of those 46 runs have been for zero or fewer yards. That's crazy. Think about that percentage. All right, so what do you do? We heard from Shane Waldron yesterday. We heard from Shane Waldron talk about a script. First 15 are scripted. Is that pretty typical, standard?
Lose the script.
Yep. Lose the script. Don't script your plays.
Script them better.
You can script them better.
That's an advantage for teams.
If you're going to do that, and you're going to, I know every team does it, and I know it's the standard, but if you're having this kind of these kind of problems in the first quarter, I would adjust the way that I did business in the first quarter. Maybe go a little bit more by feel. Where are you in field position? I'm sure they factor all these things in, but you need something to start faster to get a lead. What would the Bears look like with a lead? I don't know, but it doesn't really help by just continuing to do the same thing with the same approach. So I'm hoping they take a different approach and the results are different.
Yes, a different approach is definitely needed. There's no doubt about that. Those scripted plays are not working. Specifically, it says how many first quarter points will they score on Sunday? The first half total is out there right now on Circus Sports Illinois. It's not, the quarters haven't been broken down yet, but it's 20. It's not even 20 and a half. It's 20 on the nose. I think the Bears might score 20 by themselves in the first half. I think the Bears are going to, and here's what I'd really be interested in. Wow. I wonder if this time, if the Bears were to win the coin toss, typically they defer and you get the ball in the second. I wonder this week with the stats that we're talking about, if they won the toss, would they take the ball this week because of all these numbers that we're talking about? Would they buck the trend and let's get out there?
Who did that? Did Detroit do that in their game? I think that that's an interesting idea.
At home, right? Against a team that's not good against
the
pass.
Take the ball. Don't worry about the second half.
Let's just go for it right away.
That's interesting. Yeah. I mean, again, this is an opponent that will, that will be there for you if you want to score some points early. So I think they need to get a couple of touchdowns in the first quarter of the game. That's what I'm looking for, and make things easy on themselves and win this game, couple of touchdowns that you score early. That's a blowout.
A two touchdown win is a blowout in the NFL.
That's what they need.
Okay.
That's what they need. They need to end the suspense early. And the fact that they can't do that should be a huge red flag. This idea is scripting 15 plays good. Yes, it's an excellent thing. You go to the quarterback, you put your heads together. What do you like to do? What is your favorite play against this type of defense? You come up with the stuff the guy wants to run. You come up with one special play. You also make sure you're getting yards on first down, and then you go ahead and put that together. You should always be operating at a high level to open a game because of the fact that you've had this much time and you can put plays together. It is a very bad sign they can't do it.
Remind me to get back to this 15-play scripted thing, because the way defense come at you might be different. We need to get back to whether that's a good idea or not for the Bears to cling to.
So you think that, we'll get back to it. I would love to talk about that. I think what you're saying is, with a quarterback, you want them to show what they're going to do before you start calling plays?
Yes, because I wonder if the fact that they give you a different look affects your ability to process, or what the play in from the sidelines because of personnel groupings, and then everything gets out of whack because all of a sudden you've got 7 seconds on the play clock and you haven't called your cadence yet.
Yeah, It's an interesting idea.
Oh, my God. What a question. What a question.
That's the voice of Joe Fortenbaugh. He's here at 7:40. Get your pencil, get your paper, get it out, get it ready. It seems Mr. David's Milwaukee reversal came at the wrong time with future Cubs slugger Pete Alonso hitting a three-run homer in the ninth to lift the Mets to a 3-2 victory over the Brewers. Can you believe the
4-2.
Brewers...
Sorry, it was 4-2. I
4-2.
May have missed.
Can you believe Devin Williams blew the save and hit a batsman and gave up an insurance run as well?
He unraveled. He unraveled like I unraveled watching. I was watching this and feeling so good about my declaration, change of heart, getting ready to feast on brats and beers today somewhere after the show.
You would never feed.
I was getting ready to the congratulatory text to Murph. Hey, way to go, buddy. God, great job. And then the polar bear plunged those emotions in Milwaukee. I just was disappointed. But you know what? From you take a step back and watching the replay again, goodness sakes, when he rounds first and goes and does the chef's kiss,
that's
a moment.
Yeah,
that's a moment in October that just is you never get tired of seeing from a baseball fan perspective, because it was great drama, not good drama. This was memorable drama. The biggest home run of Pete Alonso's career, and he's hit a ton of them. I think it also took him off the market for free agency. No way Steve Cohen lets him leave now. They advance. What they do against the Phillies is maybe they'll continue it, but I think it's probably irrelevant. They have maxed out their magic, and I think they might be all out of it. But last night was disappointing if you were pulling for the Brewers. And yes, my reversal did come at a bad time.
I felt better after the fact. Yesterday, I was kind of torn. As a Cub fan, who do you pull for? You pull for the Mets or you pull for the Brewers? And I got to tell you, when the Brewers hit those back-to-back home runs, I felt miserable as a Cub fan. They were partying up there. They were having fun. I mean, what's with guys running out of the dugout in the middle of a game now?
It's the playoffs.
I almost felt like it should have been like a penalty. Like the next batter should have started with an 0-1 count because of unnecessary celebrating. Like, come on. I mean, it's not a walk-off yet. Get excited, but stay in your dugout.
Did you bring your badge, Mr. Fun Police?
I mean, stay in your dugout. Give me a break.
Really? It's postseason baseball.
Pete Alonso's not coming here, unfortunately. And now we're going to find out about the rust factor with the Phillies. Right? Like they have not played in a while. They haven't played a meaningful game in a while. But the Phillies are minus $1.80. They're the second biggest favorite in this round. And I think the Phillies are David and I's champion, or at least definitely our NL champion. So go Phillies.
Mwah. Al bacio. I believe that means sealed with a kiss. It's a sign as good as a kiss is the chef's kiss, which is an appreciation of a particularly good dish, good meal. Mwah, the chef's kiss. I love it. I thought that was, first of all, I don't want my chefs doing it. I'm not sure it's really good for the food. But I'll tell you what. I love when he did that. It was just a beautiful moment. He captured that moment perfectly. What an end to the game. I would never have imagined that Devin Williams would have not only blown the save with the three-run homer, but then he gave up the extra run. So it's now 4-2 going into the bottom of the ninth. Not that I thought the Brewers could come back, but I knew they weren't coming back after that. It was the finality of that was stunning. And as I said, before the game started, I would have thought all the Brewers got to do is get a lead, because when they hand it over to the bullpen, they're going to lock this down. And that didn't happen, and that was just really surprising. I'm going to be curious to see what happens in the playoffs. We've already had like a really nice start to the playoffs, but the best teams and the best players have yet to appear. So we've seen some really good players, but we haven't seen the greatest players are the guys we expect to be the heroes of the postseason. That's pretty cool.
It's a good question.
That's the voice of Chris Chelios right there. Now that baseball is down to its final four in both the AL and the NL, what's the biggest surprise and who is the player making an impact that you did not expect?
Well, I don't know that that has been revealed yet. I mean, you know, there are guys that you, like the best players in baseball, haven't been playing up to this point. I think I probably expected Skubal to make a big impact, and he did. I think I always expect Frankie Lindor to do well, and he did. He's a great player. You know, whether you want to talk about Bobby Witt or Seth Lugo or Cole Ragas, whomever from the Royals, that was the team that really surprised me the most. I did not see that one coming. I did not believe that the Royals, as much as you say Detroit had like a whatever it was, 0.02% chance of making the playoffs, the way they made the playoffs, you thought they could do some damage. And that's a kind of a scary young team. The Royals, I did not see winning a series. That is the one that really, out of everything that happened, that's the one that surprised me to start out. They got rid of the Astros, and that I did not see that coming. The Astros have been to what, the 7 straight ALCSs or something crazy, you know. Anyway, I thought that was the most surprising team, but I think that the players that will take over baseball have yet to be heard from for the most part. Other than, I mean, there's probably 2 or 3 guys like Bobby Witt Jr. and Frankie Lindor and Skubal.
Well, I think maybe the key to this question is that you didn't expect. Maybe that's part. I mean, listen, I don't understand why the Orioles pitched to Bobby Witt Jr. I mean, he's the one guy on that team that is so good, right? When the Guardians are playing the Royals next, right?
Name three Royals.
Right. I can't do it. The catcher Salvador Perez, I believe, yeah, right?
Salvador Perez.
Chuba, you know, he also shops in the Husky section with the maroon corduroy pants. But we talked about it yesterday, and outside of New York, it'll probably be forgotten. Jose Quintana.
The
effort that he put in.
Thank you.
You forget about that because the Mets bullpen melts down after he comes out of the game. He went 6 innings, struck out 5, 1 walk, 4 hits, 94 pitches. His performance was unbelievable.
Unbelievable.
On the road, pressure packed, do or die. And then everybody's going to remember the polar bear.
Yes.
They're going to remember Lindor, the play at the end of the game.
Frankie.
They're
going to
forget that Jose Quintana kept them in it. So I think from a player you didn't expect, I did not expect Jose Quintana to be that good last
That's
night.
That's a great call. A guy that has had success in both sides of town here in Chicago. One of the nicest guys to come through town. Nice to see him enjoy that last night. I'm most intrigued and I guess surprised, according to the question, by the Tigers. When they left Chicago back in August, did not think they were going to still be playing in mid-October, and that's where they're headed. So the Tigers coming back from where they did, winning the series, eliminating the Astros is the biggest team surprise. The guy I found myself, you know, finding out more about this week, Googling, if you will, his background, like where did he come from and how did he get this good? Has he always been this good? Michael King from the Padres. We know about the Padres name pitchers, the guys who are proven and why they are where they are. I didn't know Michael King, the guy who was in the Juan Soto deal along with Drew Thorpe from the White Sox. Now, this was a guy that had 12 strikeouts, dominant performance, one of the best ones of the week as postseason begins. So I guess right now he's the biggest surprise. Great call on Quintana, though. I'm sorry I didn't think of that. Oh, by the way, we got a texter, Mully. We have to be consistent here. Pretty sure that Chuba's name is Chuba, like the musical instrument tuba. Not to be mean, but the right version is just as fun. So it's Chuba Hubbard. We stand corrected.
Was he named after the Chuba?
I don't know.
The made-up instrument?
Make beautiful music in Charlotte.
This will be a pick six. There's your ball game.
Zach LaVine continues to talk like a guy committed to doing whatever is asked of him. Do you expect Zach to be closer to the player he was before DeMar DeRozan arrived here in Chicago, taking all the big shots as the number one option, or a reinvented version of himself with DeMar DeRozan now gone?
I think the question's interesting because I'm not sure what to expect from Zach LaVine. He sure is talking a good game. You forget how confident and how good of a communicator he is, I suppose. I'm very curious about the first time the Bulls have a last possession chance to win a game. Who takes the shot? Coby White? Zach LaVine? DeMar's gone. So who is that guy? Does he want to be that guy? He used to be that guy. Can he still be that guy? I think he can be. I think he will be. I like Zach.
Well, I think that should be the goal for the Bulls. They want the ball in his hands. They want to show him off so that if these two sides do actually want to break up, you can get something for him because everybody knows they want to break up. Now, are you willing to pay for the guy because of what he can do on the court and with the ball in his hands in a big moment?
I think it's Kobe's team when Zach is traded. So for the first part of the season, we will see Zach take every big shot. He's the alpha of this group, and he's the guy that's been the man before. And I don't think Kobe's gotten there yet. And I think, though, that Kobe will be kind of running the team and taking control of things when Zach is traded. And I do expect him to be traded in season. And I think it makes perfect sense. I think everything he said, everything he's done to this point has been absolutely correct. And to my mind, that means he's greasing the wheels to get himself out of town.
Hmm.
If he were acting up, I think it'd be harder for him to be traded.
So you're suggesting that Zach is behaving this way, being the consummate pro, because he wants to be dealt.
He's showing the league that he's a team player and he can fit in with anybody and he's willing to do anything. And he's also going to be the star of this group because he's the best player out there. And yes, I think it's exactly what he's doing.
Hugely cynical, maybe wildly accurate.
Yeah. I'm both wild and cynical.
I know.
And huge, for that matter. All right.
You're huge in the business.
Thank you, buddy. We've got the extra point next. It's Mully and Haw on the Score.
You're working from home. You settle in with a cup of coffee, ready to get the day started. Before you look at that to-do list, turn on your favorite Odyssey sports station on your smart speaker. We'll keep you company and bring you the latest updates from your teams while you tackle your inbox or get ready for another meeting that probably could have been an email. Power through the workday with the entertaining sports coverage you love from the local voices you trust. Just ask your smart speaker to play your favorite station.
Get this extra point.
It's time for the Extra Point with Mully and Haw on 670 The Score.
The vibe a week ago at this time looked disastrous, but suddenly the Bears have a chance to stack wins against Carolina coming to town. Can you please share your pick for the game? Will the Bears win this one? And can you please supply a score as well?
I think the vibes have changed and people feel pretty good about the Bears right now. That's the nature of the NFL. Every week is its own season, and right now things are looking up after a victory, a well-needed victory. They could not have lost that game and had this week feel the way that it did. It would have been chaos. It would have been calamity. It would have felt like a catastrophe if the Bears had lost to the Rams from a football perspective. So here come the Panthers, the lowly Panthers. Andy Dalton returns to Soldier Field. Defense is happy to see him, because I think that he will throw you the football. Maybe that will be wildly wrong on Monday morning when we come in back here to talk about it, but I think Andy Dalton will throw you the football if he's pressured, and I think he will be pressured. I want to believe the Bears have the edge at quarterback this week. That's got to be true for them to win and keep these good vibes flowing. I think they will. This is an opportunity for Caleb Williams to take another step, the one that includes him throwing the ball down the field and being on the same page with his receivers and showing off that arm talent and improving that accuracy. They get the running game going. They get the first down yardage that they have been lacking. They get the first quarter scoring that they have needed. And they win going away 31-19.
Ooh, 31-19. Well, we're pretty close. I've got the Bears 30 and the Panthers 10. Bears win.
Yeah, I think it's interesting because a week ago we were sitting here talking about the whole Shane Waldron fiasco and whatever he was talking about, trying to get the running game going, and oh my God, like the players only meeting. Oh, he praised all the players for how they gave him their feedback, all that. And now you just feel completely differently about the Bears. It's just one win, and it was a modest win. But I do think that we're all kind of looking for a little bit more. I'm going 28-13. I got the Bears winning the game too. I think, I tried to temper my expectations. I think I had 32 at one point. I went down to 28. But I really think they should win this game in a blowout. I really do. I think they are significantly better than the team they are playing. I understand that they're different with Dalton, and he has had success before, but I don't think there's going to be a shock factor where he's that much different than you've seen on tape. I don't know that he has another level that is going to scare you with the things that he can do. I think we know we have a pretty good feel for who the guy is and what he can do. I think this comes down to one thing. Can the Bears offense get off the schneid?
That's it.
And this is it. And
this is the big week for the Bears offense.
That's what it is.
You can't come in here Monday morning talking about the Bears really struggling against a Panther defense that is vulnerable and not really complete. And you need to take advantage of that if you're Shane Waldron and Caleb Williams.
Well, Caleb Williams, I mean, he was content to do what he needed to do to win the game, and that's great. That's great. And he said all the right things. But I wonder if somewhere in the back of his mind, he thinks to himself that Jaden Daniels is now the rookie of the month, the NFL offensive rookie of the month, after winning three of the four offensive rookie of the week honors from the NFLPA. So I'm not saying he cares about any of that, but I'm sure he does. I don't think he's in the top 10. Of the best rookies right now.
Right now?
In terms of guys that could win that award, I think this is where he makes his move, and he's got kind of a five-game stretch to be pretty damn good.
Got a couple receivers in there. You got a couple good pass rushers in there in terms of top rookies.
You got Alt probably third
in that group. You got a couple good offensive linemen in there. I do wonder, as well as Jaden Daniels has played, nobody can change that. He's got a higher floor right now than Caleb Williams.
That's right.
I wonder if people have changed their opinion about who has the highest ceiling.
That's a really good comment, and we should get back to that too, because it's pretty fascinating that this is already going on. All right, go ahead. I'm sorry.
I want to get back to, when we come back, the question we talked about, the scripted plays at the beginning of the game.
Yes, yes. Again, should be an advantage. Isn't an advantage here. 312-644-6767. Mully and Haw on the score.
Just finished up another great walkthrough. Another week stacking offensively our attention to detail. The group, the leadership group, just like last week. I know I started with that. But those guys, I thought, did a great job. Talked about last week coming out of a loss and being locked in, and then this week coming off of a win, but still coming in with that same mindset on Monday, Tuesday, of ready to look to get better, improve, and move forward.
Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio 670, The Score. That is your guy, Shane Waldron. Finishing the week with attention to detail.
My guy. Okay. Well,
you were the one who wanted to hire a new coordinator.
He is somebody that I find easy to root for, because I think that the part of his job that he finds difficult and struggles with due respect to things like yesterday and things like last week, a lot of coaches, I shouldn't say a lot, there you find coaches who aren't as comfortable in that role as others. And I do sense that that might be his least favorite part of the job. Now, the most important part of his job on Sunday is getting the Bears off to a good start. And that came up, obviously, the point of the questions, and certainly was a big talking point yesterday. He referred to and was asked about the scripting the first 15 plays. Do you think there's any connection in the devotion, or I don't want to say stubbornness, to sticking to the convention, to tradition of sticking with those first 15. It goes back to Bill Walsh, right? Every offensive coordinator can cite history in why they do what they do.
Right.
I wonder if what happens sometimes, though, is early on, they're so stuck on sticking with the plays that they have preordained to be called, that they see where the way personnel may be different, or whether they're maybe playing them may be different, and it causes just a little bit of a delay, and that may be contributing to the Bears really their pre-snap penalties early. They've got four in the last two games over the first quarter, the last two games. That's too many. And the confusion, or relative unsettled approach at the line of scrimmage. Is one related to the other, or is that overthinking it?
I think it's overthinking it, frankly. I think that you should have an advantage if you can pre-plan your game plan, if you have 15 plays you follow. And, you know, it's fascinating, David. I would love to spend some time with this subject. I know that Bill Walsh is credited for kind of starting that with the West Coast offense, but Bill Walsh began his career with Paul Brown, and Paul Brown is one of the guys in the history of the league that came up with tons of stuff. I mean, and a lot of the principles of the West Coast offense were from Paul Brown himself. I mean, it's a pity that the genius skips a generation, because Mike Brown hasn't done nearly as well with that team that his father did. And his old man was unbelievable with some of the stuff they did. I'm very curious if he would have been a guy that, because he seems like the kind of guy that would have tried to map out some plays, etc.
I agree with that, giving credit where it's due, and the origin of that is
it relevant to this?
I don't know how relevant it is to today's football, because I think things have changed so much, even from 5 or 10 years ago. I just wonder, with the way that teams have,
but I guess
how do personnel substitutions or personnel decisions on defense affect an offensive game plan or the scripted plays?
Okay,
and is
well, let me say this. This is what I was trying to get to. I think that it's on Shane Waldron to predict what the opponent will do to counter whatever it is that he's going to run. I think the first 15 should take into account whether they're going to blitz on this down and distance, whether they're going to, you know, come after their quarterback because he's a young guy. I think that needs to be built into the game plan.
So the first 15 is really first 25 or 30?
Yes.
Just because of the flexibility that has to be involved in that?
In my opinion, that's the case.
I hope so.
The other element is this, that, you know, you need to understand the way the league, generally speaking, attacks young players. It goes after younger guys. And you need to build that into your game plan so that you're not putting him in situations. And frankly, most of the time he gets pressured, it's later in the game. It's not right away. It's after they've established what they're doing a little bit, and they've been put behind the eight ball because they haven't scored, or there's been something else that's going on. They're in situationally positions. And then certainly the worst one was at the end of the game where he was just getting run over.
Well, also, we'll never know the extent to which Caleb Williams has the ability to change plays and how often that happens. The 52 pass performance, you wonder how many of those runs were converted into passes.
Exactly.
Likewise, I think there's probably has to be some flexibility built into the 15 scripted plays at the beginning of the game, because of the way that teams are going to attack Caleb Williams, because of the way the personnel may change based on what you've seen on tape.
But I think that goes back to the offensive coordinator as well. I think that you've got to understand, you know, if you have a guy like Caleb Williams who is a quarterback who doesn't want to run, he wants to throw the ball. If you give him an option, okay, here, if you see this, then we're going to run. If you see that, we're going to pass. He's going to pass every time. His
more than
inclination
likely
would be to pass, not to run.
More than likely.
So don't give the choice.
I know. Take the choice away. But that's a real inflexible way to approach game planning and play calling, I think. You have to give some autonomy to a quarterback, whether he's a rookie or a veteran? Do you think Kirk Cousins is waiting for the voice inside his helmet last night when he threw for 500 yards?
I think he's running his own thing.
He's running his own thing. And I wonder, here's the last thing I'll say in this before we get to Biggs time. I wonder if one of the approaches to consider would be, yeah, if you want to script your 15 plays, have some autonomy and flexibility built into those, come out in tempo. Come out with no huddle. Come out with the way that you want to get things going and do things differently. We have seen Caleb Williams thrive in those situations. Maybe you come in hot and think that you improvise from the beginning, and that is the plan. The plan is to improvise and to give him some autonomy because he seems to be better in those situations rather than getting out of the huddle late, calling things at the line of scrimmage, and then, there's somebody jumping. Oh, goodness sakes.
This is a team that, you know, that has lost some of its star power. Their leading tackler got hurt last week. Burns is gone. I know they still have A'shaun Robinson. And is Jadeveon Clowney hurt? Is he with them?
He was a little banged up. They had 19 players on the injured list yesterday.
19. I mean, come on. Script a play that'll work against the injured 19, for the love of God. All right, we got Biggs time next. We'll talk about the game. We'll get through the 19 players on the injury list. We'll find out if any of them can play. Mully and Haw on the Score.
You're working from home. You settle in with a cup of coffee, ready to get the day started. Before you look at that to-do list, turn on your favorite Odyssey sports station on your smart speaker. We'll keep you company and bring you the latest updates from your teams while you tackle your inbox or get ready for another meeting that probably could have been an email. Power through the workday with the entertaining sports coverage you love from the local voices you trust. Just ask your smart speaker to play your favorite station.